Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
From the Popcorn Talk Network, the online broadcast network for movie talk, Alicia Malone with Scott Movie Mance and the Schmoes Know. This is Profiled. In-depth spotlights on the greatest filmmakers and artists in motion picture history.
Hello, profilers. Welcome to another very special episode. Actually, episode 39 of Profiles. 39 and a half. But this one, you know, after we did Robert Redford a couple weeks ago, like, we just wanted to keep the momentum going with another show on just one of the greats of the 70s and beyond. Mm-hmm. And it just had to be Dustin Hoffman.
I know. What an actor. I mean, this is a guy that we've been talking about with other profiles for so long.
Yeah, absolutely.
That it's great to get a chance to really delve into his movies. He's 78 years old now, and he's had such an incredible career in film, in television, and in theater since the 1960s. And the thing that is so remarkable about Dustin Hoffman is how varied his roles have been.
Very versatile.
He can be in drama, he can be in comedy, he can be in action, he can be in animation. He's played an autistic savant, a soap opera actress, Lenny Bruce, Captain Hook, Innocent College Graduate, 7 Oscar nominations, has won 2. Just an amazing guy. I love his little cheeky smile, too.
And he also, like you mentioned, all those characters, there's a word for that. It's called a chameleon. He is known for embracing, not just taking on, but embracing really difficult roles that are all over the map. He's very, very method. And in terms of why he got into acting, he was quoted as saying, "I got into acting so that I could meet girls." Pretty girls came later. First, I just wanted them to start off with two legs and someone who'd smile at me and look soft. But he definitely stands alongside this great 70s actors like Nicholson, like Robert De Niro, like Al Pacino. Mm-hmm. And like going back to the 60s and all the way up to the present day, he is an actor that you just is so great to watch no matter what kind of a movie he is in.
He's an unconventional actor, deeply committed to every role. He's also been quoted as saying, "I grew up thinking a movie star had to be like Rock Hudson or Tab Hunter. Certainly nobody in any way like me." He came up at the time, there's this great documentary which I've been talking about called Casting By. It's on Netflix, I think, right now. And it is about the casting director and the casting director's process. And it shows how there was a time when it went from being the studio system with all the big stars that were contracted to movies and they would just place them and whatever, to looking at these really incredible method actors, these actors from New York, these theater actors, and people that you didn't expect to be the leading man. And Dustin Hoffman was one of those.
Well, incredible career, and yes, an incredible, wonderful life. And yes, that's your cue.
For It's a Wonderful Life. Roll the video.
Dustin Hoffman was born on August 8, 1937 in Los Angeles, California, to parents Lillian and Harry Hoffman. His early ambitions range from studying medicine to becoming a classical pianist, but that changed when he caught the acting bug at Santa Monica College. After 2 years at the Pasadena Playhouse, Hoffman moved to New York, studied method acting at the Actors Studio, and lived with two fellow struggling actors named Gene Hackman and Robert Duvall. After honing his craft on stage and TV throughout the 60s, Hoffman made his feature film debut in 1967's The Tiger Makes Out. That very same year, he beat out the likes of Robert Redford and Warren Beatty to score the coveted role of Benjamin Braddock in the landmark classic, The Graduate. Over the next decade, Hoffman toplined one classic after another, including Midnight Cowboy, Lenny, Marathon Man, and All the President's Men. He won 2 Academy Awards for Best Actor, for 1979's Kramer vs. Kramer and 1988's Rain Man, and he was nominated 5 other times. He also won 6 Golden Globes, 4 BAFTAs, and an Emmy.
Wow, that's a big shelf he has there, right?
Amazing.
Amazing. Well, what was your first blood when it comes to Dustin Hoffman?
My first blood was actually Hook.
Hook was your first blood?
Yeah, because I was young at the time and I remember seeing it. Yeah, I was 9 years old and people were watching Hook. And honestly, Hook is not one of my favorite movies from that time. Some people have really deep love for Hook. I never was quite got there, but that was the first time I saw Dustin Hoffman. And then, of course, I remember seeing parts of All the President's Men with my parents watching that movie, Dick Tracy as well. But yeah, Hook was my first blood.
You know, Hook, whether you like Hook or not, the fact is he is great to watch in the movie.
Yeah.
He just chews the scenery. He's fantastic in the film. My first blood was Marathon Man, which I saw when it came out in 76. My parents took me to see Marathon Man.
It doesn't surprise me now.
I mean, you know, is it safe? I mean, that torture scene alone, I mean, that was horrifying.
Oh my gosh.
I didn't want to go to a dentist for years, and it's something that you can probably relate to right now.
I just went to the dentist yesterday, so I'm apologizing if I have trouble speaking because my mouth really
hurts. She sounds great, but this movie is it was so suspenseful, taut and thrilling, and the character that Dustin Hoffman plays, I mean, he's so tortured because of like what happened to his father and, you know, what he's been studying and what he witnesses. I mean, it's just, you know, the title Marathon Man, you know, just think it's about this guy who likes to run marathons, which is why people start calling me Marathon Mance.
All right.
But this was definitely a movie that when I watched it again recently, directed by John Schlesinger, who also directed Midnight Cowboy, is a movie that holds up very, very well. Extremely tense movie. Very, very entertaining.
Yeah, well, that is a perfect segue to our Fast Five. At number five. I'm walking here.
You had to pick that cue, didn't
you? It's iconic.
There's the only one cue that you're going to pick from Midnight Cowboy. That's the one.
Walking here.
Released May 25th, 1969.
Midnight Cowboy.
John Schlesinger. This movie cost $3.2 million to make. It made about $11 million domestically at the time. 7 Oscar nominations, including for Best Actor for both Dustin Hoffman and John Voight.
Mm-hmm.
3, including Best Picture, Best Director, and Adapted Screenplay. To this day, is the only X-rated movie to ever win Best Picture.
Yep.
And the reason it was rated X at the time was because of, quote, homosexual frame of reference and possible influence on younger moviegoers.
So it was one of only 3 X-rated films to be nominated for an Oscar. The other 2, Clockwork Orange and Last Tango in Paris. And the performance of Sylvia Miles, you know, she was nominated for Best Supporting Actress. One of the shortest performances ever nominated, screen time of about 5 minutes
And
she was nominated for that. But this was a dark buddy film, you know, about these 2 homeless drifters who were bonded together. People saw the title and they thought it could be a Western, but it ends up being like a morality tale and also a look at the American class system as well. It came out the same year as Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
So it seems like a
dark flip side to both of those movies at the same time, complementing exactly what they were saying. This was only Dustin's 2nd role in a movie, and no one thought that he could do anything different from The Graduate because he was so great at playing Benjamin Braddock that people thought that was just him and
but
that they got
why,
lucky.
That's why he took on the role.
That's why he took on the role, but he had to convince the director that he was right for the role. He met him in Times Square wearing dirty clothes with the hair slicked back so that he would look nothing like Benjamin Braddock, and that's when he convinced him that he could do the role.
And he also put pebbles in his shoe so that he could keep the limp consistent throughout the making of the movie. Hoppin took the part to prove his critics wrong, and Roger Ebert later in 1994, looking back on the film, said that Midnight Cowboy proved that Dustin Hoffman, after the triumph of The Graduate, was destined to become one of the great character actors of his time and all time. This is a brave, moving, groundbreaking film. It's beautiful.
Heartbreaking.
Yeah, totally heartbreaking. But the acting, the writing, the editing of the film, everything across the board, no wonder it won Best Picture.
And him and John Voight together.
Great chemistry.
They were great chemistry, and they both were pretty unknown. I mean, Dustin was famous from The Graduate, but no one thought he could do this role. John Voight, no one knew him, and he had to really fight for this role as well. So they both did such a great job at it.
Well, Camille Howard, said this about Midnight Cowboy: it's impossible to choose a Dustin Hoffman performance to be the favorite, but the closest to the favorite status for me is Midnight Cowboy. The entire film is so complex and had so much potential to be off the wall, but the realism that Hoffman and Voight brought to their roles is incredible. Hoffman in particular plays Ratso Rizzo in an incredibly vulnerable and sympathetic way. Yeah, you could actually not like him, but you do.
Yeah, he's pretty unlikable.
He's pretty unlikable. But Midnight Cowboy is something of a forgotten classic, except on profiles, but it will always be one of my favorites.
And I think it's amazing that even though people haven't seen Midnight Cowboy, they will still know, like Maud, my roommate, for example, she's never seen Midnight Cowboy, but she knows, I'm walking here.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm walking. Dan Skip Allen says, in Midnight Cowboy, you have an upstart young guy from the Midwest, John Voight, and a slick New York hustler, Dustin Hoffman, Ratso Rizzo. This worldly con man takes the young cowboy under his wing. This is a film about two unlikely friends and how they switch. Hoffman is perfect as this flawed, dying man. And hi to everyone watching live profiles
hi,
on YouTube
everyone.
Right
hi,
now.
Hi, profilers.
Hi, Tyler Myers and Cole Boone and everyone. I could love watching all the live comments.
And these people are our friends.
Our friends.
We love our profilers.
Our film geeks.
Well, this was a tough call when it came to just choosing your favorite scene. But when it comes to Dustin Hoffman, Leash, what is your right stuff?
I went with the obvious one, but I just love it so much and even more every time I see it. The Graduate.
Okay.
The ending scene.
The ending scene. Why?
Because it's so unique. It's something that you wouldn't expect. And it'd been parodied so many times that I'd actually seen other versions of it before I saw the actual film. But I love how their expressions change. You know, they break away from everyone. They're rebelling against authority. They get on the bus. They're laughing. And
the
then slowly
fade.
Fades away to this worried, scared look. This kind of, oh my God, what have I done?
What am I going to do now?
What are we going to do now? And probably, you know, brings up questions of whether it's a happy ending or a sad ending, and also brings up the questions of whether they were doing it because they're really in love or they're doing it just because people said they shouldn't do it because they hadn't really been on many takes
no,
before.
No, they didn't. And the one date they were on
was terrible.
Was horrifying.
Yeah,
but that's,
and
that
the sounds
scene.
Of silence with Simon and Garfunkel. The whole thing is brilliant.
It absolutely is brilliant. Just as brilliant, and I was kind of thinking that you might go for this one,
yep.
Is the big reveal in Tootsie.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God. That is such an amazing scene when Dorothy, Michael Dorsey, or Dorothy Michaels, you know, she's going off. She's at the top of the stairs. Immediately goes off prompter. And everyone, all the producers, the camera people are like, uh-oh, what's she doing? What's happening? And she's like, it's time to set the record straight. And she totally goes off the wall with this great, great monologue. Takes off her eyelashes. And everybody's looking like, what's going on? Takes off her glasses. Rips off the wig. Amber Kimberly, the reckless brother, my sister, and everybody's like, I'll be damned. What? No wonder. That's why she didn't like me.
People fainting.
And then Bill Murray is like, that is one nutty hospital.
It's
just such a great scene, a jaw-dropping moment.
Really, really
great.
One
of many, many right stuffs for Dustin Hoffman.
I know. Very hard to choose.
Well, that brings us to so much trivia, so much details. Trying to segue to the last detail.
The last detail where we talk about the did you knows of our profile person. So did you know?
Tell me.
That Dustin Hoffman holds a Guinness World Record for the greatest age span portrayed by a movie actor. For Jack Crabbe in Little Big Man, where he played the character from age 17 to age 121.
Well, what they're playing.
That's a span.
That is a span. And did you know that Dustin Hoffman was chosen or considered to play Rick Deckard in Blade Runner, which is one of my favorite movies of all time?
Interesting.
What else you got?
Did you know that while filming Finding Neverland, Dustin lost the tip of his finger and he had to perform all day on morphine?
Wow.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Well, did you know
that what are you doing there?
Dustin Hoffman is one of four actors to win two Oscars for films that also won Best Picture. That is a hell of a milestone.
Yep. And did you know that he has six kids?
He has six kids.
Karina, Jenna, Jacob, Rebecca, Maxwell, and Alexandra.
Wow. Well, we're going to pause right now to take care of some business here. Mm-hmm. Because, first of all, I just have to say, Alicia Malone, that is a very cool t-shirt you're wearing.
That's also a cool t-shirt you're wearing.
And it says Film Geek, and this is the one and only Profiles t-shirt that that we have been meaning to do forever.
For a long time.
And here it is, ladies and gentlemen. Make sure you go on TeePublic. What is it? /user?
Yeah, teepublic.com/user/profiles. And this is where you can find this t-shirt. And if you buy one, then make sure you tweet us at MovieMats, at Alicia Malone. Tweet us a photo of you wearing it, and we will retweet it out.
And if you buy a Profiles t-shirt, Alicia will send you a virtual hug. And she's a hugger.
I am a hugger.
So also, if you are listening and watching, make sure you go to iTunes and you subscribe to Profiles. This is where we really make our mark, by you letting us know what you think. Make sure you rate and review us. Subscribe. Go to youtube.com/popcorntalknetwork. Subscribe to Profiles there. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at Alicia Malone, at Movie Mance, at Alicia Malone, at Movie Mance.
Pause.
At Alicia Malone, at Movie Mance. Make sure you go to our Facebook page, which is Profiles with Malone and Mance.
As Christo says on YouTube, everything is in the pause.
Everything. It's all about the pause.
It's all about the pause.
But on Facebook, if you go to our Facebook page, Profiles with Malone and Mance, like our Facebook page, you'll be the first to find out who our next profile is. You can also let us know what you think of the movies that we're going to talk about, because you can see that we do read them. And you can also join in on the brackets, where you get to vote for your favorite character, movie, favorite scene. And moving on to number four
in our Fast Five, which is
Mrs. Robinson, you're trying to seduce me.
The Graduate, released December 21st, 1967, directed by Mike Nichols, cost $3 million to make. Lifetime gross to this day is $105 million. 7 Oscar nominations, including Best Picture, Best Actor Dustin Hoffman, Best Actress Anne Bancroft, Supporting Actress Catherine Ross, and 1 Oscar win for Best Director. That would be Mike Nichols.
Well, of course, this is the film which launched Dustin Hoffman, his first movie role. It captured the feelings of a whole generation, you know, the kind of 60s disaffected youths rebelling against authority. It's like the older generation versus the younger generation. Hoffman had that great everyman quality that I think was the antithesis of the Pretty Boys. Interestingly, that as we said, our Redford profiles, that Robert Redford was considered for the role, Warren Beatty was considered for the role also, but you can't quite imagine either of them doing this because they were too good looking. Exactly.
Who would believe that those guys couldn't get a girl?
Exactly.
Come on. Now, Dustin Hoffman at the time, I mean, he was perfect for the role.
Yeah.
And just ironically, he was just 6 years younger than Anne Bancroft, who played Mrs. Robinson.
Really?
6 years.
See, my question to you is, when you rewatch this movie, are you like Roger Ebert, who changed his mind about it? First, he was feeling for Benjamin Braddock as the innocent college boy.
Right, then he felt for Mrs.
Then
Robinson.
Then he felt for Mrs. Robinson.
Well, I never did.
Do you think there's a villain in the movie?
Well, clearly, I think that while Mrs. Robinson is not the villain, I would say that she's, especially in the scene when the sort of the gig is up and she's just standing there looking totally vulnerable.
Yeah.
And you really felt for her. You really felt for her. But I never didn't like Ben Braddock.
Yeah.
But I will say that he was a character that reminded me over the years of Holden Caulfield, the character in The Catcher in the Rye. And when I was redoing my research for this, the New York Times actually mentioned that in their 1967 review. But again, what a movie that just was so right on for the youth.
And groundbreaking, started off these new directors at that time. So Mike Nichols, it heralded him as like one of the big talents.
The 5 movies that were nominated for Best Picture for 1967 were all over the map. You had Dr. Doolittle.
Yeah.
You had Bonnie and Clyde.
Yep.
You had In the Heat of the Night and The Graduate. And there's one more I'm missing. But but all these movies, it was like that year was the movies were at a crossroads, and you had, which is why Mike Nichols won Best Director for The Graduate, but the movie that actually won Best Picture was In the Heat of the Night. That's the one.
The Heat of the Night.
Yes, that was the movie.
Of
that
course,
was
Simon
5.
And Garfunkel with that great soundtrack that went throughout the film and just worked so perfectly with all the scenes. It was a huge box office hit. It got fantastic reviews. even though Life magazine said if Dustin Hoffman's face were his fortune, he'd be committed to a life of poverty, which I think is pretty harsh.
Oh, man, that is pretty harsh.
And also not true, because he is got that really sweet thing about him, and I think he's quite attractive in this movie,
yeah,
too.
He's a good-looking guy. I wouldn't go that far.
Also, I think this is a movie that coined the term plastics, which is used plastics. For Mean Girls, like, down the track, too.
Yes, plastics. Got one word, plastics.
Plastics.
Roger Ebert, at the time, in 1967, which made this one of his earliest reviews, said, Dustin Hoffman is so painfully awkward and ethical that we are forced to admit that we would act pretty much the same way as he does. And joining us right now on the phone, it is absolutely our honor and our privilege to welcome Catherine Ross, Oscar nominee as Elaine Robinson in The Graduate. Catherine Ross, you were on Profiles about Dustin Hoffman with Alicia and Scott. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you.
Thanks so much for being here.
It's so nice to talk to you. We were just chatting about The Graduate and its everlasting appeal. Why do you think it holds up even after all these years? What can you attribute that to?
I think it's a classic story. I mean, I think that that's... it's a classic. It's a classic story, and it was very well written in script form and beautifully directed by Mike Nichols.
Well, how did you come to be cast as Elaine Robinson, and what do you remember about the first time you met Dustin Hoffman?
Well, I did a screen test. I actually did two screen tests on two consecutive days. The first one I did was with Dustin, and the second one I did was with Charles Grodin. And I believe that, you know, there had been everybody in town that was of the age that appropriate for that part was tested. I was one of the last.
Well, we're glad you got the gig, because yeah. You're fantastic in this movie. It's this really incredible performance.
Definitely. And Mike Nichols, I mean, what a great director. What was it like working with him on this movie?
Well, you know, he was also a classic, and he has this gift of making you feel like you're doing it all, and yet he's the captain of the ship. He's at the helm, and he's really guiding you. But in the most easy way, so that it's not like you don't feel like you're being manipulated, but you probably are.
Well, even though you only have one brief scene with Anne Bancroft, what are your memories of working with her, and what was the dynamic you observed between Anne Bancroft and Dustin Hoffman?
Well, you know, I wasn't around. When they were filming, you know, most of their scenes, except when our paths crossed, which was not too many times in the film. There's the time when you first see me and he comes and picks me up. Later on, when he watches as me and my father are loading the car and I'm going to Berkeley, and then at the wedding. So we really almost had no scenes together, and I didn't have the opportunity, except a little bit during rehearsal, to watch them working together. You know, Mike had only done Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf prior to The Graduate.
That's right.
So he was a newbie to film, and we had 3 weeks of rehearsal. We could have taken this on the road before we even started filming. So I got to watch a bit of that. You know, what was interesting is that the first person that was cast as my father was Gene Hackman.
Oh, well, really?
What happened?
And for some reason, which I was not privy to, he and Mike came to a parting of the ways in terms of doing the part, and then Murray Hamilton was cast.
Wow.
So I don't really know what the issue was, but, you know, a creative difference, maybe.
Well, yeah,
that would have been interesting, because Dustin and Gene Hackman lived together for a time.
Well, they wound up making a movie together many years later.
Yeah, but of course you shared some great scenes with Dustin Hoffman. What would you say are your fondest memories of working with him on The Graduate?
Well, you know, Dustin is a perfectionist, and he had only, I think, done one movie also prior. And he was in a production off-Broadway, which I don't really remember the name of. And that was his first love and his focus. You asked me what my first impression. He looked like he crawled out from under a rock. He was wearing all black, and he was and he was very pale. And, you know, us Californians, you know, we're sun lovers.
Yeah.
We used to be before it turned out to be so bad for you. you know, so we're all, you know, tanned and so on. And here's this guy from New York with a black turtleneck on and black pants and, you know, looking white as a sheet just because he's not out in the sun. And he was, you know, really looking forward to getting back to New York, although he was, I think he's from Southern California.
Mm. Well, one of the scenes that people talk about the most in The Graduate is the last scene when Ben interrupts Elaine's wedding and they run off and Mrs. Robinson says it's too late and Elaine says, not for me.
Right.
Oh, it's so great. I mean, first, I just want to know, two-part question here is, one, what was it like filming that scene because it's so iconic? And second, what is your interpretation of that very last shot when Elaine and Ben's smiles fade away?
How do I want to approach this? You know, it was a lot of... One thing about filming that movie, all across the board, was that it was fun. It was very... maybe because we'd rehearsed and gotten all the nonsense out of our systems, maybe because we were all sort of new, you know, except for Anne and Murray and so on, in terms of doing film. But it was, Nichols was fun. Very smart, clever people. It was not, you know, like a big, serious, heavy drama in front of the camera or in back of the camera. you know, he just kept the camera rolling at the end of that scene when we're on the bus. And, you know, you learn very early on and that you keep in character until the director says cut.
Wow.
And he let the camera just go. And so, I don't know, it just evolved that way. I mean, I couldn't tell you what we were thinking. Like, maybe Elaine's thinking, oh, what have I done here?
That's what we were thinking.
I mean, I don't really know, but it's just... it was just, it's one of my favorite parts of the film, actually.
Yeah, ours too.
Yeah,
ours too.
It's my favorite. I love how ambiguous it is and people can read into it as they want.
Yes, and it was just Mike letting the camera roll.
Wow. Just capturing that naturally.
Well, how long into filming the movie did you realize that you were making something that was so special and maybe even a movie that would define a generation?
You don't ever know that.
Wow.
I mean, if one knew that, we'd only have great movies.
That's true. Yeah. That's very, very true.
You know, I mean, you don't know. You really don't know how anything is going to turn out, how people are going to receive it. You know, so there wasn't any kind of, you know, it was a good, rewarding experience.
Yeah.
And that's what you know, that's what keeps us going.
And then it was nominated for 7 Oscars. How did that moment feel? Particularly, you were nominated as well.
Well, it's nice. It's very nice, you know.
But what are some of your other favorite Dustin Hoffman movies, other movies that you'd seen over the years that just really struck out for you?
Oh, I don't know. Tootsie, of course.
Yes.
But Marathon Man, Little Big Man. I, you know, I don't think there's ever been a Dustin Hoffman movie that I didn't like.
Well, that makes three,
you know,
of us.
He's good. He's good, and he's such a perfectionist. You know, I mean, he could be a pain in the butt. but, you know, it's not being a diva, and it's not being, you know, self-important. You know, he sticks up for what for the character and for what he, where he thinks the character's going and where he sees the character going. And it's great to work with someone like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But
amazing.
it is really great to talk with you, Catherine Ross. Thank you so much for calling in and sharing your memories of one of our favorite movies and Dustin Hoffman. Have a great, great day. And thank you again for calling.
Oh, you're more than welcome.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yes.
Yay.
Hooray.
She was wonderful. She was so interesting. And people on YouTube watching live just stopped commenting. And as Christos says, everyone is just listening to Catherine intensely.
Oh, that's
great. She was so interesting.
Well, this
Fantastic.
Is a landmark film.
Landmark movie. Let's get some comments from our profiles about The Graduate.
Let's
Billy
do it.
Polahan says, it's a film that I think of constantly now more than ever. Many people can relate to Benjamin Braddock, who just doesn't know what he wants to do and the crazy affair he has with Mrs. Robinson, played by the fantastic Anne Bancroft. Dustin Hoffman portrays innocence, disillusionment, and a longing for something more that not many actors can pull off. The soundtrack by Simon and Garfunkel is iconic, and it actually goes with the plot of the film. I love the film, I love the soundtrack, I love Dustin Hoffman, hashtag film geek, hashtag profiler for life, P.S. Here's to you,
Mrs.
Malone.
Jesus loves you more than you will know. Well, Tyler Meyer says, The Graduate is one of the most brilliant films to come out of the 60s counterculture movement. It's a terrific character study of lust, life, and insecurity, and Hoffman plays the role of Benjamin Braddock flawlessly. His actions with Mrs. Robinson may seem revolting, but in a weird way, you kind of understand what he's going through, for he just wants a little excitement in his life. As funny and witty as the movie is, it isn't afraid to take a left turn into some serious drama, mm-hmm. especially with the ending to the movie, which wraps up in a rather melancholy way that I believe fits right with how the characters were represented throughout the film and the consequences that were to be had on them. It's truly a remarkable film that may be told in an unorthodox manner, yet is wholly original and will live forever.
KC Yazzie 88 on YouTube says that he was waiting for the high five so he could do his shot. So
let's
here we go.
Do it right now.
There you go.
Take a shot.
Okay, time for our quiz show. I have a feeling you'll get mine because you kind of mentioned it earlier.
What would it be? Let's hear it.
At you anyway. Okay. Which of these films did not win Best Picture? Which of these Dustin Hoffman films? Was it A, Midnight Cowboy, B, All the President's Men, C, Rain Man, or D, Kramer versus Kramer?
That would be...
Did not win.
That would be All the President's Men.
Yes.
But it should have.
Should have won.
I mean, yes, Rocky won.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
Can't we just give out two?
My question for you,
yes.
my friend,
okay.
is this. Which of the following Dustin Hoffman movies was not directed by Barry Levinson?
Okay.
Is it A, Rain Man, B, Wag the Dog, 3, Billy Bathgate, or 4, Sphere?
It's either the last two.
Okay.
Billy Bathgate?
Yes, that is a great guess, and you are correct. That was directed by Robert Benton, who had previously directed him in...
I forgot that he did Sphere.
Yeah, he did Sphere.
There you go.
That's an easy movie to forget, isn't
learn
it?
Learn something new every day.
Okay, we're getting good on profiles.
Right, well,
we are number 3 in our Fast 5, Alicia Malone.
And
coming in at number 3 is...
That would be...
It's Michael Dorsey, okay? Your favorite client.
How are you?
Tootsie, released December 17th, 1982, directed by Sidney Pollack, cost $21 million to make. Box office was $177 million domestic. It was the number two movie of 1982. What was number one? You know, you have to know this.
Oh, E.T.
E.T. the Extraterrestrial. Excellent.
I thought that was 81.
Yeah, okay. But you guessed again. It was a great, you know your stuff.
Guessed
10 Oscar nominations, including Best Picture, Director, Screenplay, Actor for Dustin Hoffman, Supporting Actress for Terry Garr, another one for Supporting Actress Jessica Lange, who won. So damn funny. This is a perfect movie, a crowd pleaser. It is a statement on sexism.
Yeah.
It is, you got a great, strong female character.
Mm-hmm.
I know she's he's in drag, but it's got a big heart, fully realized characters. It is sharp, smart, well-layered, full of surprises.
Well, it's interesting that the character of Dorothy Michaels becomes a feminist icon in the film for not putting up with the men. And, you know, that the character of Michael Dorsey learns a lot from being Dorothy Michaels and becomes a better person after playing her. Dustin, of course, lost the Best Actor. Do you remember who he lost to?
That would be, 1982?
Yeah.
Wait, don't tell me. I know this.
Okay.
I know this.
Yeah.
I know this, Profilers. Don't look.
Do you want to keep
I know it. It's Gandhi. It's Ben Kingsley.
Yes, it is.
Is that, yeah?
Sir Ben Kingsley won for Gandhi. But I like that Tootsie was also poking fun at Dustin Hoffman's reputation for being a difficult actor because he was very method. He liked to take his time with the movies. So Michael Dorsey is that character and making fun of it at the same time. He didn't get as much. I don't think he got as much. He wasn't given as much rehearsal time as he wanted and was promised by Sydney Pollack. He said, I was promised 2 weeks and I was grieved that I didn't get it. We also followed the risky course of starting to shoot with a screenplay that wasn't completed. But
that
of course, it all worked out in the end. And I posted a clip on Twitter yesterday of Dustin Hoffman. He was talking about Tootsie years later, and he starts crying when he talks about everything that he learnt while playing the character, because he said he realized that he must have missed out on some really interesting women. Meeting some really interesting women because he judged them on looks alone.
Wow.
When he had his costume on, he realized if he was in a bar as Dorothy Michaels, he would never talk to himself.
Well, while he was in costume, the crew felt safer to give him bad news because they felt like he wasn't as mean when he was dressed in drag.
He was nicer.
He was nicer, but he did clash a lot with director Sidney Pollack on the making of the movie. Sidney Pollack usually won the argument, and in his review in 1982, Roger Ebert said that Tootsie is the kind of movie with a capital M
that they used to make in the 40s
when it weren't afraid to mix absurdity with seriousness and social comment with farce. It also makes some well-aimed observations about sexism. And while preparing for the role, Hoffman watched Le Cage aux Folles several times, visited the set of General Hospital, and gave Dorothy a Southern accent because he felt like doing the Southern accent made him sound more like a female.
And it's also amazing when you watch the film, you do forget that it's Dustin Hoffman as Dorothy Michaels.
You do.
It looks totally different. Well, Joe Messina says, let's not forget his brilliant comedic performance in Tootsie, a performance that would have won him an Oscar, but he was up against Ben Kingsley's towering portrayal of Gandhi. Drama, comedy, leading man, character actor, Hoffman is cinema's most versatile actor ever.
Well, one more bit of trivia before I read my comment from Josh Price.
Yep.
That Tootsie was based on his mother.
Oh, right.
And that Tootsie was her mother's nickname for him.
Mm.
So there you go.
I liked when he's like, don't call me Toots.
Don't call me Toots. But Josh Price says, what makes Tootsie so engaging is its view of sexual identity. It's also a heartfelt and hilarious romance, and Dustin Hoffman's performance is incredible. Like screwball comedies of the 40s, which is what Ebert said, it plays with the dramatic and the bizarre to examine gender roles and relations with social commentary that has something to say about everything from show business to sexism. Though you never quite get that it's Hoffman playing a woman as she begins to form a life and personality on her own, Dorothy becomes an eccentric and immensely likable personality that stands on its own, and that is why it works.
Morgan Robinson on YouTube says, actually went out and bought Tootsie today, especially for this profile.
Oh, right.
Enjoy watching it.
Enjoy watching
it. I really
it.
Liked rewatching
Let
it.
Let us know what you think. At Alicia Malone, at Movie Mint. All right, we'll get to that. So. Now moving on to some other great Hoffman movies that didn't quite make our Fast Five, but are still pretty damn close if we did a Fast Six. Maybe we'll do that one of these days. What's on your list?
All the President's Men.
Yep.
We talked about that last time with our Robert Redford profiles. Great movie, and Hoffman and Redford worked so well together.
Straw Dogs, 1971, directed by Sam Peckinpah.
Controversial.
It was extremely gripping, intense, and disturbing. Ahead of its time in terms of a man forced to do what he has to do to protect himself and his family. And it's just a movie that holds up to this day. It's still disturbing to watch. What else?
I'm going to throw in one that I personally love, I Heart Huckabees.
You like that movie?
Yeah, I really do.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of David O. Russell's quirkier stuff. And I saw I Heart Huckabees 2004 and really enjoyed it. Loved Mark Wahlberg in it. Especially loved Dustin Hoffman as the existential detective alongside Lily Tomlin. I know there was difficulties during the shoot, but I really enjoyed what it said. It's such a weird movie, but I think it's clever, and I think more people should give it a chance.
You know what? I saw it once. I didn't dig it. Maybe I'll go back and watch it because I'm being influenced right now by Profiles.
Good.
Another movie that I loved was Lenny, directed by Bob Fosse. Came out in 1974, played controversial stand-up comic Lenny Bruce. This was an unconventional movie about an unconventional character, and one that Dustin Hoffman knocked out of the park.
Also, Wag the Dog.
Great movie.
From 97. It's a satire on politics. His first movie with De Niro, and he plays a film producer who has to fake war footage to distract the public from a sex scandal. So it's very true to life and a great script by David Mamet.
Came out in 1997, right around the time that Clinton was, you know, there was some
dealing with some stuff.
Art imitating life there, and it was like the Dr. Strangelove of its day. Another movie I loved is Runaway Jury, which came out in 2003, directed by Gary Fleeter, and this was the movie that he finally got to star alongside his good buddy and longtime friend Gene Hackman. This is an entertaining and thrilling courtroom drama based on the book by John Grisham.
Now, do you have any more before I get to the graphic, brackets?
One more I just want to mention is Confidence, which also came out in 2003, directed by James Foley. He played a mob boss with no scruples. Mm-hmm. Very entertaining movie. And with one last thing, I know we mentioned Little Big Man. That is a terrific tour de force performance. And let's talk about our brackets.
All right. Come on, mouth, work with me. So on our Profiles with Malone and Mance Facebook page, we run brackets. Well, our profilers run brackets for each of our profiles so you guys can participate in a bit of competition. So this time they did Dustin Hoffman Best Characters. And it came down to Benjamin Braddock from The Graduate versus Michael Dorsey or Dorothy Michaels from Tootsie. And then Ted Kramer from Kramer versus Kramer versus Raymond Babbitt from Rayman. Both were close, but the finals came down to Raymond versus Ben by two votes. Ben. One of them won Ben.
Ben
Braddock. Ben only Braddock. By 2 points.
Wow.
It was really, really close. And Rachel Cushing, thank you for helping out. Plus, she says to please thank Liam Legrand, who came up with the matches and all the write-up. So thank you, guys. We really appreciate our profilers and everything you guys do on your own on our Facebook page. Love that it just takes off a life of its own, and there's a whole community there. Film Geeks.
Yes, Film Geeks, Profiles for Life. You guys rock. We love when you join in on the fun by going to our Facebook page, doing these brackets, and definitely writing comments about the movies you love, because we do read them. Obviously, and we're going to read more in a second while talking about the number two movie in our Fast Five, which is...
When you're getting further away from Kmart.
You don't have to go to Cincinnati to get a pair of underwear at Kmart.
You have to go to Kmart, 400 Oak Street.
Kmart sucks. Released December 16th, 1988, is Rain Man, directed by Barry Levinson. Cost $25 million to make. Box office, $354 million worldwide. Mm-hmm. 8 Oscar nominations, 4 wins, including Best Picture, Best Director Barry Levinson, Best Screenplay, and Best Actor for Dustin Hoffman. This was the second time Hoffman won a Best Actor Oscar for a movie that also won Best Picture. Pretty good.
Well, we talked about this with our Tom Cruise profiles, but Barry Levinson, Dustin Hoffman, Tom Cruise worked in this movie for 2 years in preparation. Dustin Hoffman befriended many autistic people to learn about the disorder, and you forget that you're watching Dustin Hoffman. This is an incredible performance because he creates a character, even though he doesn't have that many emotions to work with, and he's not portraying a disorder, he's portraying a person.
Right.
And him and Tom Cruise worked really well together because Dustin Hoffman said they're both very monk-like, they both are really focused on their performance, so
yes,
they fit
are.
Each other well. And he also said that this was the first time he was working with someone who was going through what he had 20 years before with The Graduate, that first flush of fame.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can understand him.
And while they were making the film, I know we talked about this during the Cruise profiles, they called it Two Schmucks in a Car. But 3 weeks into filming the movie, Dustin Hoffman was so unhappy with his performance that he was ready to walk off the set. He wanted out. He thought he was doing horrible work. Of course, everyone begged to differ. So many great moments in this film. Mm-hmm. Some of them improvised, like the scene at the end when Raymond leads his head into Charlie and says, you know, my main man, Charlie. You know, that was all improvised. The scene in the phone booth when he farts.
Yeah.
And he goes, uh-oh, fart. He goes, did you fart? How do you stand that? How can you stand that?
Yeah.
That was all improvised. And Dustin Hoffman said that was one of his favorite scenes, like, ever.
Well, it's great that Tom Cruise and Dustin Hoffman both improvised a lot, and they also improvised as each other's characters when they were rehearsing.
Right.
And some of those moments also made it into the film. It just seems like it was such a great production, and that ended up being a great movie. And also an anomaly at the time, the late 80s, that was when it was the age of the big action film.
Yes, that's
right.
So you
had this kind of indie-like comedy drama, but very small, same time, big budget, and starring like the two biggest actors in the world.
And also a movie that I don't think we get made today.
No, it seems too small today.
Too small. I mean, you know, maybe someone took a chance as an indie, but the New York Times in their review, they said Dustin Hoffman's performance was one of the best displays of sustained virtuosity. And Roger Ebert said few actors could get anywhere playing a character who cannot change. But Hoffman proves once again that he almost seems to relish and thrive on impossible acting challenges. I don't know how he got me to do it, but I felt a certain love for Raymond, Dustin Hoffman's character.
It's true. David Wright says, hi, brand new to Profiles. Welcome.
Yay! Welcome to Profiles.
To me, one of his best performances was Rain Man. Even though it's about Tom Cruise, Hoffman as Raymond truly steals the show. Tom's character changes the most, and Hoffman is portraying a character so incapable of change, but that's okay. Plus, Hoffman uses method acting to portray a man with severe autism, and he doesn't make it come across as pandering and insulting.
Very true. Brian Sutfield said, Rain Man is a special film to me for one reason. And that this is why I pulled this quote. I have a friend who battles autism. When he was diagnosed, I watched this movie. His father recommended it to me, and I was able to relate to it very well. Like Charlie, I didn't quite understand what was wrong with my friend, and over time, I understood, and I helped him out. I haven't seen it in 3 years. I might start to tear up, but let's move on from the sad stuff. The movie is fantastic. I don't see Hoffman. I see the character Raymond Babbitt, which is the best thing you could say about a performance. I bought him and Tom Cruise as brothers. The film is endlessly rewatchable due to its great blend of humor and heart. That's why it's my favorite of Hoffman's filmography. If you guys decide to watch this movie, just be sure to watch it with toothpicks or go to your local Kmart afterwards. Lights out by 11. Very well written,
That's
Brian.
A great
Very
comment.
Well written. Yes.
Raymond Morris is watching live on YouTube and says, I keep looking up when they talk about this movie. I keep hearing my name. But seriously, fantastic movie. First film I saw that helped me exploring the more character-driven dramas and indie films growing up.
Well, that brings us to number one in our Fast Five for Dustin Hoffman, which has to be.
I'd like to know, what law is it that says that a woman is a better parent simply by virtue of her sex?
Wow. Kramer versus Kramer, released December 19th, 1979, directed by Robert Benton, cost $8 million to make. Box office domestic was $106 million. It is the highest grossing movie of 1979. Kramer versus Kramer was nominated for 9 Academy Awards. Wow. It won 5. It was almost a sweep because it won Best Picture, Director, Adapted Screenplay, Actor for Dustin Hoffman.
His first Oscar.
And it was Supporting Actress for Meryl Streep. If that was a lead, that would have been a sweep.
And we talked about this movie during our Streep profiles as well. But Dustin Hoffman is brilliant in this film. It's probably more reserved character.
That's
for
what
him.
I like about it.
That's why it's very realistic.
Right.
And he changes a lot as a character from this advertising art director who's so caught up in his work to the loving father. But it's so realistic and natural, as is his relationship with his son and how that changes throughout the film. They teach each other so many things, but it's all very realistic and very self-contained.
Like in the beginning of, towards the beginning of the film, after she leaves him and he's trying to make breakfast for his son, he's like tripping over everything. He's making
a
mess.
Towards the end, it's all perfectly choreographed.
They have it down. And
Perfect.
It's such a great, like bookend to the film.
Yeah.
And, the interesting thing is that this movie, in hindsight, it's hard to see it, but when it came out in 79, it was a trailblazing film. It was one of the first movies to really look at the impact of divorce on a family.
But I still think it's a unique film because it looks at the single father in a movie and not a single mother. And it also examines that whole theory, like with the quote just said, that the custody should automatically go to the mother rather than giving the father a chance, particularly in this case where the father was so capable. That courtroom scene is so heartbreaking. There's some really touching
great.
Moments through this film. And in the 70s, as you said, divorce was this hot button topic, but this was still stands the test of time. When you watch it now,
oh, it's still
it still affects you. And to everyone who hasn't seen it, I definitely recommend it.
Definitely recommend it. One of the reasons, presumably, that Hoffman was so committed and so great in the role was because he was going through a divorce at the time after 10 years of marriage. And he actually worked on the screenplay with Robert Benton.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't take a screenwriting credit, even though Benton offered it to him. He turned it down. But Hoffman was quoted as saying, "What makes a divorce happen is that you can't be in the same person anymore, but the love stays, and that's the killer. That's where the vehemence and the anger and the rage come from." And he just spoke from experience because he was going through it at the time, and Meryl Streep was still going through the grief of losing John Cazale.
Yeah.
So, you know, both of them really just knocked it out of the park with their performances.
Well, Dustin also said about Robert Benton, "Perfect directors make you emotional. On Kramer versus Kramer, Robert Benton made me emotional. He was pulling so hard for me, and he made you want to give everything to him."
And Hoffman also had this to say about his co-star Meryl Streep, which is so true. "Meryl Streep is like an ox when it comes to acting. She eats words for breakfast. Working with her is like playing tennis with Chris Evert. She keeps trying to hit the perfect ball." And she does quite a bit.
Well, Morgan Robinson said, "Kramer versus Kramer is such an incredible drama. Hoffman is so perfect in the role, and the relationship with his son is so beautiful to watch." But Morgan said he'd have The Graduate as his number one in Fast Five.
I mean, what does it say when you're talking about a filmmaker and you're talking about The Graduate and the best of list, and Graduate, we put it at number 4.
I know. And I think this Fast Five, I mean, people will have their own opinions about what should have been in which order.
Right.
But for us, Kramer versus Kramer, particularly rewatching it for the Street profiles, it really hit home for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And also,
and it made me realize again how brilliant he is.
But also, you know, you're talking about two roles that he won Oscars for. The film's also won Best Picture.
Yep.
Yeah. It's got to be Kramer versus Kramer and Rain Man.
Mm-hmm.
And saying it oh so well, like she always, always does.
She always does.
We're giving the last word to the one and only Rachel Cushing, who is our just an amazing, amazing film critic. "Sometimes it's the simpler performances that shine the brightest, and Hoffman's portrayal of Dick Kramer is a clear example of that. As a workaholic who is oblivious to the needs of his wife and young son, Hoffman is arrogant and quite unlikable, but as the movie progresses, he grows and learns in a beautiful and honest way. Watching him learn what it means to be a single father, build a relationship with his son, realize his mistakes, and want to truly make up for them is a journey worth watching thanks to Hoffman's humor and humanity."
Mm.
"His chemistry with young actor Justin Henry is pitch perfect, and everything about his performance, from his attempts to making French toast to his testimony in court, feels completely natural and rightly earned him his first Academy Award."
Nicely put,
Rachel.
Nicely
put, Rachel.
Well, we'll run through our business one last time before we go.
Before we run through our business one last time,
yes,
I just have to say that it gives me such great pleasure to be doing this for the second year in a row. Ladies and gentlemen, profilers, please join me in wishing Alicia Malone a happy birthday. September 4th is Alicia's birthday. So please tweet her at Alicia Malone. Copy me at Movie Nance. At Alicia Malone. At Movie Nance. It's all about the pause. At Alicia Malone. At Movie Nance. I just want to say,
what do you got?
Happy birthday, Alicia. You can open the card later, but open the book now.
Okay, I'll open this now, and then you keep going with the business.
Okay, going on with the business, make sure you follow us on Twitter. And okay, wait. There's a story here. You knew what it was going to be.
Yeah.
That is why I came in, and I looked at your book, and you're at the very end.
Okay, so I always write my my notes for profiles in this Wonder Woman book, which you bought this for me. I bought the first one, and then you liked it, so you bought me the second one when you saw I was nearing the end now. So for my birthday, Matt's got me another one.
Yes, because when it comes to Wonder Woman is Alicia Malone and vice versa.
I like her blue hair.
She's got the blue hair. You had blue hair at one point, right?
I know, but I want
blue hair. Wants to. Yeah, she won't be Red Fury anymore. But moving on with our business, make sure you go to iTunes, follow or subscribe to profile us on iTunes. Yep. Rate and review us on iTunes. These ratings and reviews seriously are what keep us in business. And make sure you share the iTunes podcast with everyone you know. Same goes for their YouTube show version, which is at youtube.com/popcorntalknetwork. Subscribe to that and please share profiles with as many people as possible. Let's really make profiles go viral. And then, of course, please go to our Facebook page, which is Profiles with Malone and Mance. Like our Facebook page so you can find out who the next profile is going to be. Join in on the brackets, comment on the movies, and once again, follow us on Twitter at Alicia Malone, at Movie Mance, at Alicia Malone, at Movie Mance, at Alicia Malone, at Movie Mance. And finally, one more bit of business is go to TeePublic right now and get these nifty, cool-looking Profiles t-shirts that says hashtag FilmGeek with the Profiles with Malone and Mance logo. It's on teepublic.com/user/profiles.
I thought you were going to get me a cupcake and I was going to be like, I have to blend it because I can't eat anything at the
moment.
You
know, it was meant to be. The book is closed. And just in the future for Profiles, you know, while we've been doing the show over the last year, we've been figuring out who we're going to do based on like who we can get to interview, just some of the great filmmakers and actors and actresses. Mm-hmm. But we have not done enough diversity on Profiles, and that is going to change. We need to balance this out. I feel like Profiles is almost like just a reflection of the inequality in the business.
Yeah.
But you know what? Rather than follow the trend, let's set a standard on Profiles.
I like it.
But by keeping a balance, so we're going to see a lot more diversity over the next year and definitely over the next few weeks of Profiles.
Yeah, I want to do some foreign directors as well.
Yes, maybe we'll do.
So much we can do with Profiles.
We'll do a character.
Oh, that could be good.
Maybe we'll do like a movie character.
Yes.
You know, just a little bit of a hint of a movie that's coming out in a few months.
I like it.
But until next time,
bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.